Center Church and Hello Center Communities. Very excited this week because sitting across the table from me is Darby Trask.
Hello.
Who, gosh, I think I've known for over a decade now. Is that right? Is that correct?
Probably pretty close, if not that.
Something like that.
That's crazy.
And it's been just very interesting to see over the years kind of Darby's evolution and like her thinking and her faith. It's been fascinating and encouraging, and so I'm super, super excited. And also, like, which is what happens, it's like one Mike is then into adulthood, which is like the development of expertise, right? and specific interests. And so I think we're going to touch on some of that today. So I'm very excited to be in conversation with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited too.
Yeah. So maybe you can open up and frame a little bit of what the discussion is about today.
Sure. So I wanted to talk about self-care and Sabbath. So self-care for the Christian and kind of how our sacrament of Sabbath coincide. And kind of the reason I wanted to talk about this is when Jeremy asked me if I wanted to do this, I kind of had this thought of like, well, A, what have I been thinking about and meditating on lately? And like, B, what am I kind of an expert in, or what do I feel comfortable talking about? And most of the things that I spend a lot of time thinking on, I don't feel qualified in any capacity to talk about. So I have a background, you know, in yoga, and now I'm a licensed massage therapist, and so I feel like I know a lot about self-care, but as of lately, I'm really bad at practicing it, and I feel like, you know, since having a baby about a year ago, my really personal discipline of self-care has kind of taken the back burner, and I've been spending a lot of time thinking about how self-care, specifically the practice of self-care as a Christian or from the Christian perspective, how some of those self-care techniques help us essentially serve God and community better by taking care of ourselves and using self-care as a spiritual discipline. So that's kind of where I'm coming from on this and why I wanted to talk about that.
Absolutely. And it sounds like we'll be moving through a few different kind of big ideas along the way, ranging from, you know, what is self-care? How do we think about it as a component of Sabbath? Self-care and community care, their differences and similarities,
sure.
And probably many other things along the way. So maybe whether it's, you know, pregnancy or a new job or career or, you know, new demands from like your social circle or whatever, new goals, like this is something that goes out the window very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I think society as a whole, or Western society, has kind of made this cheapened, capitalist-fed version of self-care, which is like, here's a bubble bath and all these products you need for this, and go get a manicure or whatever, which are good things. I think those can also be self-care practices. I enjoy doing those things as well, but I think self-care really is something so much larger and more significant, and taking that shallow view really cheapens what it can offer to people and to a community to better serve others. And I do think, like you said, it is what kind of gets thrown out the window first if you are in any sort of chaotic season. But really it should be what we're holding on to pretty tightly. I think that it can anchor us to like knowing ourselves, and therefore like anchor us to knowing God and knowing how we can best serve those around us. So
I think that I'll speak from my experience for a second on this. I've noticed, maybe not, I'm trying to remember times like the language has been used directly, but I've, in this way, but I've noticed that maybe in the subtext there is critique within some circles of like evangelicalism or Christianity toward self-care. I don't know. I hope I'm not jumping around. I'm curious if you, that may just be, by the way, that's maybe my very narrow experience, but like you don't always see that as a value within some Christian communities. Again, maybe just my experience. Have you noticed that as well? And if so, what you're thinking around why it is Sabbath, there's certainly at least lip service paid to Sabbath.
Sure.
But I think the overlap is there. We'll explore it. But, like, why is that something that sometimes people balk at?
Yeah, I think even as I was kind of preparing for this and jotting down some notes, you know, I was doing some simple Google searches, like, self-care for the Christian to see the overall consensus. And it was like, self-care, bad. Like,
really?
Why the enemy wants you to practice self-care.
Really?
Just these ridiculous things about how you can't both practice self-care and follow Jesus because you're prioritizing self too highly or whatever. Mm. So I do think there is that notion. I had made this note that often a lot of evangelicals tend to think that self-care is this means of distraction to proper Christian living, or it's this thing that takes our eyes off of God. But I think, you know, we can take this general understanding, and I think most of the people listening, maybe, I don't want to tell people what their thoughts are if I don't know for sure, but I think that most people listening would probably say that self-discovery or self-knowledge or self-knowing, and even doing things like taking time to do therapy or working on like a deeper connection with themselves has helped them grow closer to God in some capacity, or helped them understand their friends better, understand how they relate to their family. And I think in the same way that taking time to do the deeper self-discovery, it's kind of, I would say self-care is almost like this, like, off to the side of that. It's just like this small way to take these little practices and use them as a spiritual discipline to take that time to yourself to have the overall intention of bringing you closer to God and others, if that makes sense.
It does. It's curious that you mentioned self-discovery. You can imagine a scenario, like I can easily imagine like a kind of a scenario where somebody's saying something like, I don't know, well, I'm dealing with these things in my life. Therefore, as it pertains to like my faith, my relationship with Christ, I'm going to be reflective. I'm going to engage in some kind of form of self-discovery. I'm going to try to think about what's motivating me to do these things, whether they're deemed productive or unproductive, whatever. And like, I think most people would, in traditional religious circles would applaud that. Self-discovery, I feel like, almost has its place.
Mm-hmm.
But something about self-care becomes something else for people.
Yeah, people are really turned off to it. But it's funny,
kind of the intellectual process of like, oh no, that's good.
Yeah.
But like when it comes to like that is a whether self-care is the bigger umbrella or self-discovery is, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe you have clarity on that, but like it seems people for some reason it's a verbiage thing or something.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said a lot of people at least pay lip service to Sabbath. I think, you know, the same people who aren't necessarily prioritizing practicing Sabbath are probably some of the same people who are very turned off to the self-care idea, or maybe not practicing Sabbath in like its fullest way of knowing it, you know, retreating to spend time with God or really making that a sacred time. I can't really think of anything more Christ-like than, like, taking care of yourself so that you can then serve others more. And I think that should be the end goal of something like self-care, whether you're a Christian or you're just, like, someone who is, like, drowning in their job or their whatever. I think the overall idea of self-care is so that, like, you have things to give to other people then, too. You have emotional energy, you have, like, love, you have support, you have time, whatever. And so I think it's funny that it's still such this radical view to practice self-care amongst some Christian communities.
Yeah, in some ways it would be, one would think that this conversation would be so obvious it would be unnecessary.
Sure.
But really, you're exactly right that is not the case. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of the people I know that I think would have most, and to be fair, I think I probably most are not necessarily within like our like center church community. I think I would have more trouble naming folks there, but certainly friends and networks outside of it that would maybe kind of take issue with the frame at all. And I'm thinking, like, I don't know, they, like, well, no, take up your cross, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of
long-suffering.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This, which I feel like is just such a misunderstanding of what it means to suffer well.
Yeah.
And, like, the person who is trying to avoid suffering is, I think, engaging in, like, an attempt to control their environment of their world. It's a very human thing to do. Also, though, the person who's trying to orchestrate their own suffering,
mm-hmm.
kind of doing the same thing,
yeah.
right? Like, the person who's, like, looking for the next opportunity to suffer,
yeah.
I think is also kind of missing it. And I think that in that they are trying to, I think, essentially trying to play the role of God in their own lives through,
yeah.
like, some kind of providence. And I think there is... So maybe this would be a good moment to... how would maybe define some terms? Like, how would you define self-care? How would you frame it as we begin to think about that, like, within Christianity and Sabbath
yeah.
and so on?
I think that's a hard question. I think it's pretty dependent on essentially what people's needs are. So for someone, it may be that stereotypical, like, bubble bath. They just, like, need some time to unplug and unwind. And I think that can be, like, this sacred, beautiful practice. I think for other people, it can be, you know, for you, maybe it's like a bike ride where you're not necessarily even going anywhere. You're just taking a bike ride for the sake of, like, doing something you love. Or, you know, for someone, it could be something that seems a little bit less self-care-ish, like organizing an event. I don't know, something that makes them feel rest and makes them feel joy and peace and comfort and knowing that they're doing this thing that it feels like they were kind of born to do, almost. So I don't think it's always that stereotypical way that we look at it. I think it can
yeah.
be that. It can be massage therapy. It can be a yoga class. And those are amazing things. But I think it's dependent on the individual and what their personality is and what their needs are. And I think specifically for the Christian, I don't think it's different. I think it's the same thing. And I think that it can, you know, if we want to get into Sabbath versus self-care, I think they can coincide. I think they can be some of the same practices with the intention of kind of essentially, I mean, I think God is ever present, but almost inviting him into this place of like retreating in a way that you're also inviting God in. And I think that that's where they can coincide and become both self-care and this practice of Sabbath, where it's both and it doesn't have to be either or, in my opinion.
It's really interesting, and I'm glad we're taking some time on, like, just kind of the boundaries of this term and, like, what it includes and may not. So, like, if somebody, because I think there's a lot, there's just some layers to this that I think are worth maybe unpacking a little bit. So, for example, somebody who is, you know, I don't know, let's take something like nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
like, maybe somebody who's like not really taking care of themselves in that way, mm-hmm. and then begins to take care of themselves in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, would that fall under that umbrella as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, I mean, it's care. It's whatever you're needing in order to be this like healthy, whole, I don't like using that word because we're always whole, but kind of this picture of like fully human and fully yourself. And so what you need in that moment in order to do that. So nutrition, exercise, I think those are more typical practices, but also other things too.
Well, something I noticed that you were, as you were listing these various kind of examples or pictures, like, self-care might be that I noticed you were connecting, which I think is valuable for any church to go back to, is kind of frankly an emotional, psychological, or I'm also careful about just like putting all of these words together. Well, emotional, psychological, spiritual, like what all this, like, no, I don't actually quite think they're totally synonymous, but you seem to be tying like, there's kind of some kind of payoff
sure.
to this, right? Yeah. Like, would that be the case as well?
Yeah.
Like there's some kind of, emotional, psychological value added.
Yeah, I think
so. Is that fair to say, or is that how you would represent it?
Yeah, I think it's hard, to kind of, yes. Yeah, I think, yes, there is almost always a payoff, but having that expectation of always having a payoff might be detrimental to
right.
The way that you're going about it, in the same way that I think you have to go into a practice of taking Sabbath or taking rest. You can have this expectation like, yes, you're going to meet God there, but it might look a little bit different.
Sure.
I think with Sabbath, it's like, yes, I might receive more... Or with self-care, I might receive more energy or ability or whatever to then give to my community, to give to my family. But having that expectation every time might not
right.
be the best for you or for the way that you view the practice,
right.
if that makes sense.
It does. I think the thing I found... useful about your comment is that there is a first. I think these are not best categories when we're like bluntly dividing the rational mind, the emotional mind, one's intellect. I just don't find that to be personally so productive.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I think that like there's room to do that occasionally to just for clarity of communication, but I'm troubled by. A tendency within some sects, movements of Christianity to basically ignore the emotional register, whatever that even means,
yeah.
entirely.
Yeah.
So that it's like, no, but I'm doing good work, but I'm like, you know, I am engaging in Christian community, but there's some giant waving flag at least in an emotional register, that something is wrong.
Yeah.
And this kind of tendency or tradition, whatever, wherever it comes from, it's in the culture as well to just kind of dismiss that.
Mm-hmm.
Or to, as you were kind of referencing in passing at the beginning of our conversation, to either dismiss it or to try to sedate it through consumerism, through whatever.
Sure.
And... I think that's a major problem, and I guess something I'm hearing that you're bringing up is that self-care is tuning us back into that,
yeah,
and insisting that it matters,
yeah.
If that's what
for sure, I think that
you're saying there,
yeah, definitely, and I think it comes back to or comes around to this conversation of, you know, a practice of mindfulness as the Christian, and I think. You know, kind of marrying this idea of being mentally present, which you know, mindfulness as being like mentally present and focused, but also having this emotional response and allowing that emotional response. So marrying mindfulness and then a self-care practice, because without having some sort of emotional or allowing some emotional response, I think that you're losing the fullness of your self-care. So, again, like you said, there are obviously, I don't like this dichotomy, is that the word, between two,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
This dichotomy between emotions and intellect either, but obviously some people feel like they're maybe driven by their emotions more, and some people feel like they're driven by their intellect more, and I think a self-care practice often is more challenging for someone who feels driven by their intellect because they feel maybe that they don't have the time to turn off their brain in that sort of way, or I think that's kind of this idea that a lot of people get from it, whereas those who feel more comfortable or driven by their emotions, those are the people who are like, yeah, let's take a bubble bath every night. I totally deserve that. Or that's kind of the stereotype of how those two different groups of people function. And it's equally as beneficial to both the groups of people, but I think that they have different challenges. I think someone who's more maybe emotionally driven, their challenge with self-care might be to make it this very intentional thing, especially if they want it to coincide with a practice of Sabbath, whereas someone who maybe feels more driven by their intellect might have the challenge of allowing an emotional response from their self-care practice in order to fully receive the benefits of what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that you know, it just seems so obvious to me. Somebody comes to me and like, gosh, I've been like not been able to get this like problem, idea, whatever out of my head. I've been like wrestling with this thing, whatever it might be. It may be in like, I'm like in the religious sphere, it might be a political issue, whatever it might be. Of course, like the first thing you're going to say is, well, like dig in, explore it, work toward truth, get clarity. Like, let's have conversation about it. And that's not considered a weakness. It's considered, that's not a bug. It's a feature.
Sure.
But somehow when it comes to that kind of emotional wellness, mm-hmm. or psychological well-being, it can be considered a feature to just like grit your teeth and bear through.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I thought that we're supposed to be a whole person.
Right.
Not divided in these categories. And I think there's something interesting about self-care there that I think it is a caricature to like paint it as just a, you know, yeah, just like merely like a bubble bath or something,
right.
Merely like the self-help section of like the
sure.
bookstore. Like, no, there's real work involved mm-hmm. in this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
I mean, massage therapy is an interesting example. It's like, there's pain in that, right? I mean, it's not just this easy,
sure.
You know, there's real pain in the process of being well.
Yeah, there can be. And then I think a big thing is commitment to whatever you're choosing to do in this practice. So, like, I think nutrition is a good one. That one's hard for a lot of people, myself included, to prioritize eating foods that nourish your body all the time. That's really hard for some reason for mm-hmm. a lot of us. And, you know, that's oftentimes a financial commitment, that's a time commitment, you know, it's all these things coupled together. But when you do experience the fullness and the goodness, I do think that, you know, for the Christian or for anyone, but specifically the Christian and the way that Jesus calls us to serve others, you have a larger capacity to do that. And I think in our current cultural climate, where these horrific recent events of racism have brought awareness for people, or for the generalized public, of, you know, the catastrophic effects that racism has on us as a society, coupled with a pandemic and people just feeling this overall overarching sense of chaos in their lives, these are the times that people should be implementing these self-care practices if they don't already have them, so that they can not live in kind of this state of just, you know, like we get in these modes of just like, well, I'm just trying to make it through the day, like I'm just trying to get to dinner time, I'm just trying to get to bedtime, whatever. And I think if we could, as the Christian community, start implementing more self-care into our lives, myself included, we would have a larger capacity to help A, those in need, but even just be our community in supporting each other through this time.
Yeah, Walter Brueggemann talked about the Sabbath and said that, and so he was speaking particularly to the Sabbath, but I think built into that is all of the self-care that you've been noting. He said that that teaching, and he was an Old Testament scholar, he said that teaching is the most, I don't remember exactly what word he used, something like disruptive. Basically, we don't think of the Sabbath, we don't think of, I think, what you're talking about as necessarily subversive or disruptive, but it is. I mean, he noted that, you know, one of the biggest things we can do as a Christian community is take some window of time, a day a week, where you're not participating in the economy mm-hmm. in the same way that you do 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm fully aware that not everybody's able to do that. I'm aware that not everybody's able to, like, not go shopping on a Sunday or on a Saturday, whenever you're Sabbathing. I'm fully aware that people have to work at those times. So I know that it's complicated. But, like, he's essentially saying, like, one form of, you know, on the one hand, you have people who are like, I don't really put much stock into this. And so they discard it. But on the other hand, you have people like, I'm doing too much important work. Like, it was just so hubristic. It's just such an arrogant position, right?
But that's so many of us all
yeah,
the time.
I think most of us probably fall into one of those.
Even if it's not necessarily saying it like, well, I'm just doing too much. It's like, well, I'm busy with my family and my job and cooking dinner and cleaning my house and spending time with friends, which are all good things. Mm-hmm. And inherently together, they're like beautiful, amazing things. But if you're not doing in these like intentional ways that are hopefully reflecting Christ, then what are you getting out of? Like, what is the outcome? Who is that benefiting?
Right. And exactly. And Kate said this at one point to me, and I think she'd read it somewhere, so I just don't know the sourcing on this. But she said, you know, busy, and I'm certain she got this from someone, but she said that we, in our, like, societally, to say that I'm anxious, depressed, worried, overwhelmed, those are flags for people. Like, that's not, like, socially, that is putting you somewhere in a hierarchy, and it's not a flattering thing to say about
sure.
yourself. And when people hear that, unless you're talking to some, you know, sophisticated or insightful, wise people, there are certain kinds of responses to that.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that you're busy is a badge of honor.
Mm.
You know, it's this way of framing some of the exact same kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, and again, I filling this with caveats, but I tend to, and maybe I'm wrong about this, we might disagree about this, I think that busyness for a season, I tend to be more okay with that.
Sure.
Like, and seasons are tricky, because sometimes they can be kind of a long season of busyness.
Mm-hmm.
But the person who's, like, in that perpetual state of busyness, I think that, who's ignoring self-care and Sabbath, I think is... I don't know. I mean, it societally could be a badge of honor, but really, I think maybe we need to have the same kind of concern that we do if somebody's willing to say, like, I'm anxious all day. Like,
sure.
just something out of place.
Well, maybe.
If that's your posture all day, every day.
Yeah, and maybe even more of a concern, because they're not often recognizing it as a negative thing most of the time, these people. Whereas the people who are coming forward and saying, hey, I have anxiety, I have depression, I need help because I have these things. The difference is this badge of honor. So it is this hugely countercultural thing to practice rest in any sort of capacity. And I think Christians should be the ones leading that up. But unfortunately, I think with this idea that a lot of Christian communities have of Christians should be long-suffering, Christians should not take time to themselves. Christians should always be, like, serving to the point of no self-care. That's a disservice to everyone involved. So I think Christians should be kind of leading these self-care practices in their community, or showing people, hey, this is what proper self-care can do. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of times it's the opposite, where Christians are the ones not admitting they're having this problem with over-busying themselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Very interesting kind of framing of self-care within Christianity. So maybe you could talk for a minute about, and this may be in your own life, where as a discipline, self-care has been very challenging, and what are some good mechanisms for allowing this thing to happen and happen well?
Sure. That's a toughie, because this is something I'm learning as of recently. So I think I can speak to my own personal experiences, and my own personal experiences for a long time led me to believe that people who weren't practicing forms of self-care, or even just over-busying themselves to the point of not having the capacity to practice forms of self-care, that those people were always just not prioritizing this discipline in a proper way. And I remember teaching yoga class after yoga class, and traditionally a yoga practice ends with a pose called Shavasana, or corpse pose, where you're lying on your back and essentially resting your body and kind of settling into this kind of grounding sense of, I'm done with my practice now. And it can be a sort of reflection for people. And I would teach these classes, and during Shavasana, I would give some sort of reflection or meditation. And oftentimes it would include, you know, I know the kids are at home. I know you have a million things on your mind. I know this. I know this is hard, but just take this time. You're worth it. Just do it. Just believe that you deserve this, whatever it may be. I would say that, and it was so simple to me. Flash forward a year and a half later, I have a one-year-old, and I haven't had serious self-care practices in my life the entire time my son has been here, like, been alive. So it's very tricky, and I think it does, the practice of wanting to implement those self-care disciplines in your life may come more naturally to some people. I think that some people are better at prioritizing those things, or some people may get more enjoyment, whether that be like their literal hormonal response. Maybe they get more, I don't know the correct, like endorphins from that practice. I don't know exactly like the neuromuscular makeup of like why some people may be more, or may have this tendency to want to practice more self-care, whether that be physically moving their body or eating healthy or whatever. But I do think that no matter what, it is this sort of discipline for people, and maybe even more so for people who have this tendency to busy themselves, or people who have children at home, or people who have a job that they're working 50, 60, 70 hours a week at, or people who, people who have a lot of people maybe that they consider themselves like mentoring or discipling or meeting with during the week, or people who are even literally like physically serving Jesus more, like serving the community more.
Right.
It may be harder for those people. And I think that it's in those situations, it is almost always a discipline for anyone, but it's maybe a harder discipline to kind of take up and start these practices.
Yeah. I appreciate that. I think about like the person who's, I don't know what, their rest whatever that, I don't want to use the word Sabbath intentionally, but their rest, I don't know what, I don't want to call certain things out, but it's like, yeah, like, no, I don't, you know, Saturday I didn't work and my roommate was out of town and I played video games for 12 hours or something and I don't feel better. That is no more Sabbath than somebody who is insisting that, like, their work habits, you mentioned the 50, 60, 70 hours a week or whatever, that is no more Sabbath than somebody who's insisting that those hours are somehow Sabbath. Like,
yeah.
In other words, and I want, I mean, it's worth noting the, like, there is a socioeconomic angle to this.
Huge.
There's an
one.
Issue of privilege here.
Huge.
That is very, very interesting, right? You know, it's worth noting that for the person who's just, like, vegging out, yeah, no, there's probably a reason you're still, your emotional register, like when you're, like, laying down at night, you feel like something is still amiss. It very well may be that you're not correctly Sabbathing. Your point is that it's a discipline.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as easy as that. It's not as easy as just, like, not having any meetings with somebody in a day.
Yeah.
That is a problem. That needs to be addressed and probably through community. But similarly, I've known many people like this. I know you have as well. These are friends, people that are our family or like family to many of us that are within our church, or people we know that are outside of it. It's like, I don't have that luxury.
Yeah.
It's a luxury. And to those people, I also believe, and this is where I think we get, and this may be something we don't see eye to eye on exactly, I think it's also important to understand Sabbath and the role of self-care within it as a discipline, because, yeah, it's going to be much harder for you and it's going to look much different for you.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, speaking of my experience again, right now I am a stay-at-home mom who's also working probably close to like 40 hours a week at home during nap times, and then after my son goes to bed until like 11 p.m., 12 a.m., 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you know, through the night, a lot of nights. And so I think for me, finding that time not only seems impossible, but it's like, why would I prioritize that right now when I can prioritize, I don't know, sleep,
mm-hmm.
which can, I think, also be a form of self-care. But again, it's this sort of intentionality behind it. And so coming back into it as a discipline in the same way that this example often rubs me the wrong way, and I think a lot of other people, but I've been kind of relating them in my head, but reading scripture as a discipline, or prayer as a discipline, or meditation as a discipline, or walking your dog as a discipline. And, you know, there's a million examples of these sort of disciplines we have in our life that maybe take a lot of time or maybe don't take very much time at all. And I think that your practices of self-care, although disciplines, can be these smaller things that you're implementing if you are in this season of kind of survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, I don't want to build this idea that that's not good enough or that's not right or that's not what you should be looking for. If you have a large capacity to implement a lot of self-care, do it. That's mm-hmm. awesome. I think everyone, like you said, goes through these different seasons where maybe they have time and then they don't have time and then they have time and they don't have time. And I don't think that's the enemy here, or the goal isn't to dedicate 2 hours a day to
right.
self-care.
Right.
The goal would be more of just engaging in the discipline in whatever capacity you can do.
Right. I really appreciate that insight, because I've seen, I become very concerned about areas of, and it's a religiously, like, it's a certainly a weighted word, but I think it should be, and I think it's an appropriate word here. I'm most concerned about areas of idolatry where we intersect with culture in ways that are simply not good. I mean, I mentioned the Brueggemann thing with, like, with the economics, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's good, you know, it's good to not spend for some season, for a
yeah.
day or whatever, at minimum, because it it distances you from your understanding of yourself as primarily consumer, for example.
Sure.
Similarly, we have these other kinds of idols at work where it's like, yeah, like again, we're patting people on the back. It's very indirect, but we're patting people on the back. Not like, good for you, you work 60 hours a week. No, I don't think that's said. But what is said is like, good for you, you bought the thing.
Or you're working hard to support your family. It gets really messy.
It really does. It really does. And then, like, I think of the people, like the single mom that's working 50 hours a week or something. It doesn't even have to be that kind of, like, trope. Mm-hmm. It could be, you know, two-parent household where one parent is working 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that person very well may say to this kind of discussion, like, that would be nice.
Yeah.
And that's actually another kind of, I think, idol that was built. People saw these people working themselves to death and then said, no more of that. We're now going to enjoy, you know, shorter work weeks, flexible schedules, working from home part of the time. All of those things are only achievable for a very small percentage of our population. So I just really... and are not available to many people. So I just really appreciate your notion, like you referencing this as a, framing it as a discipline, because what that means is if you're in a tough situation where it really is hard, don't hate yourself or feel like you're not, health is not available to you for the fact that your acts of Sabbathing, your acts of self-care cannot look like someone else's.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, like my whole vocation of a massage therapist, that's an expensive practice for people, and I'm very aware of that. I'm very familiar of like this wellness gap that exists and the amount of privilege people have to have received in order to receive weekly massage. I can't receive weekly massage, you know, so I think it does, the waters get really murky, because I personally think everyone should have access to those forms of self-care. I don't know the solution on how we can make that happen, because also I have to get paid, you know, so it's, things get really messy. But self-care, I do think it goes back to that. Let's not cheapen what this is. It may be that for some people, but it may also be drinking a glass of water, because you're someone who doesn't drink water like once every week. I don't know, like, like Michael doesn't drink water, so I'm like, you have to drink water. So those sort of things.
He does not drink water.
He doesn't drink water.
He chooses to not hydrate.
Michael will be like, man, Darby, I just feel really sick. I don't know what's wrong. And I'm like, well, when did you last drink water? And he's like, I don't know, 3 days ago? Like, what if you had to drink soda? Well, that's why you feel sick. Go drink a glass of water. So I think, you know, those sort of things, those are also, like, it may be like a silly example, but that is also a practice and a discipline of self-care.
Right. Some people are in the position where they can take a silent retreat for a week. And other people are in the position where they can get 10 minutes of time.
Maybe.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Where they can, you know, enjoy a cup of coffee in a moment. And we want to actually, this is probably bridging into some of the next part of the conversation, but like, I think at a communal level, it's a shared responsibility within the church or outside of it to have a heart for and eyes out for people who rarely have acts of generosity or kindness extended to them.
Right.
And to come along and help when we can. But I find the more we set up these like stereotypes of what somebody who does and does not have like room to Sabbath, like what those look like, the more we probably are overlooking the many people in our like right there in our network that really don't.
Right.
And so without it being remotely self-serving, just like as a parent who saw like, you know, Kate, who was, you know, very driven and productive and I would not say like at times overly busy, but like was really getting that in hand. And then you have a child, right?
Yeah.
And then you have to relearn all of that, and it takes a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
And so that's not even to be remotely like, there's no self-pity in that, none, but just this awareness, like, you know, you just have to relearn it.
Right.
All the time. And, like, it looks like a lot of different things. Right. So.
Yeah. And I, yeah. So the thing that kind of sparked my, when I started really thinking about, oh, man, I should practice self-care in some capacity again because I haven't been practicing that for a long time, was actually this tweet that I saw, like, scrolling through social media, and it was this tweet that said something along the lines of, one of the problems we have in society is we keep screaming self-care at people who actually need community care. And, you know, even as just a new mom who has a good support system and an amazing community and a great family and enough financial stability, I can implement some of these self-care practices into my life. Even for me, that was like, oh my gosh, I've been so turned off to this idea of self-care for so long because it's marketed to the rich. It's marketed to what place, whatever thing this one, I mean, there's so many different aspects that are marketed to different categories of people or socioeconomic levels or whatever. Even, you know, like typical mom self-care, what they are kind of screaming at moms, like, you have to take time to yourself to better serve your kids, whatever. Those kind of things seem so...
They really undermine the whole project.
They really do.
They certainly take away the sacredness of them.
Right. And it's also understanding that you may be losing some of your sense of control over what's happening. And so I think for a lot of people who either A, don't have the capacity to practice self-care at this time in their lives, whether that be financially, whether that be they literally don't have the time, they don't have the, like, they're not in the mental space to practice it. They don't have community support to practice their choice of self-care, whatever it may be. So for those people who don't have the capacity to lose that sense of control, we're asking them to do something that isn't sustainable for them in any sense of A, like, self-care for themselves, but for their family, for whoever's being affected by this loss of control. And so this idea of interconnectedness between Christian community, but also I think Christians and, like, our community, our cultural community as a whole, I think that's our responsibility here. So not losing sense of self and not losing that self-care, but even more than that self-care is prioritizing how can we communicate this care in a way that it benefits all of us instead of just the individual.
Yeah. As I was thinking about this conversation, one primary passage came to mind in Exodus, I think somewhere around like Exodus 20, 24, 25, maybe getting that wrong. Moses is basically given 7 speeches by God. Like, he's like, kind of, these are like given to him that they correspond with the 7 days of creation. And the final speech, which, by the way, there's all kinds of, you know, and if they don't do this, they shall die. But it's you know, classic, like, Exodus, Old Testament, very, you know, interesting stuff that has to be unpacked and understood in its context. But in Exodus 31, it's very, very interesting. And I'm glad you're saying these things. It shows some of the, I think, connection, the through line between Sabbath and the nature of self-care within it. But in the final speech that Moses is given, got from God to Moses, this is said. So it says this: "It is a sign forever between me and the people of Israel that in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and he was refreshed." The word there actually means like resold, like reselfed. Like, so one way, it's a correct way of thinking about God resting on the seventh day is that God kind of rests as like God is transcendent. God put everything in order, and through everything it being ordered, God is present. It's really a beautiful picture of like God, what it looks like for God to rule creation, because it's this idea that through all of creation, God has put everything has a place, and it in harmony, it works together. It's really, really wonderful. But also built into this meaning that you really get its sense of in Exodus 31 is that God is showing us how to live in this world.
Yeah.
And even God, it says on the seventh day, was resold.
Yeah.
Was seeing who he is in light of the universe.
Yeah.
That he's created. And I think that value, when I think of our community, I want to encourage our community to not allow the vacuous and sometimes like these caricatured ways that self-care has been presented. Don't allow that to rob you of the actual value that comes along with correctly engaging the Sabbath.
Right.
And correctly engaging this. That would be an immature thing to do.
Yeah.
The fact that, yeah, it had, like you've highlighted many of them, the fact that it has been consumerized, the fact that it has been misrepresented, and the fact that, yeah, probably many people that are thinking people want to like distance themselves from that, they find it to be gross or kind
right.
of ridiculous. Don't allow that to deprive you of the value of being resold,
yeah.
being reselfed.
I love that.
I mean, that's like built into the fabric of the created order. And I guess this would be the other final thing I have on this observation you made. Like, and because if you don't value it for yourself, by the way, you're not going to help other people.
Yeah.
You're going to, by not help, I mean to say, you're going to miss it
yeah.
when they're in need of it.
Right.
Like, they're going to be in need of it. And because you are starving yourself of it, you're blind to it.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to help the community either.
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know if you, I know that's a lot at once, but I just feel like to honor God by like honoring this in your own life is actually the very way in which you'll see that other people have need.
Yeah, for
you know,
sure.
So
for sure. And it is so much greater than this caricature that we make of it. I think so many Christians are independently focused on their personal relationship with Jesus instead of the communal connection to Christ. But a lot of those same Christians don't have any sort of personal connection to self. So they're hyper-focused on personal relationship with Jesus without having a personal relationship with self. And I think as a whole, we would all benefit significantly more if maybe our focus could shift both from personal relationship with Jesus, which is good, but more of a focus on communal connectedness to Christ. And then also, instead of a cultural obsession with this personal connectedness to self through maybe these consumerized ideals of self-care, we could shift that as well as Christians to this community care and caring for ourselves through caring for each other, because self-care is great and awesome, but without that community care, I don't think real work will be done in the self or in our communities.
Right.
So self-care is good, but community care is better.
It's a really interesting.
Holy and sacred
use,
and beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think the Christian focus should be on that collective.
Right.
And there can be tremendous communal impact when that happens.
And at once it subverts this cheapening of like, self-care is only at like this kind of like, again, this consumerist or economic it only happens through those mechanisms. I mean, it's like Leah, like, giving us, like, vegetables from her garden, which is very thoughtful,
right.
You know, and not necessary, but just kind.
Yeah.
Or it's like the cooks, and also Jason Morrison and also others, like, you know, like, basically, like, running Luke and Brooke's wedding.
Yeah.
You know, it's like all of the, you know, it's all, it's you, it's, you know, the Trasks, like, opening up their home for, like, center communities to meet. And, like, it's, you know, people helping Philip rebuild a house or whatever is going on in his, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, and the examples are honestly just, I could go on and on and
right,
on.
Right.
But, like, those kinds of generosities, right? At once is, like, it's good. You know, it goes back to this thing that, like, I don't know where we got this, where this misunderstanding of, like, you know, I think of whether it's a Good Samaritan parable or it's the idea of, like, loving one's neighbor. I'll love other people and I'll do that sacrificially. Yeah, like, the Bible, like, insists that that is part of what it is to be a part of the new kingdom. But when it comes to my needs, to understand what it's like to love other people is to accept the love of Christ.
Yeah.
There's this, it's so strange how that, it's like 2020 now.
Yeah.
And if we talked, you know, again, like, to go back, like a decade ago, that idea persisted then, and it was becoming popular again in the early aughts. This, like, I don't, you know, I'll serve people until
but
I'm
I
in the
trash.
Ground. Yeah, that's right. But at once I'm trash, and also I'm too strong.
Yeah,
and proud and capable.
And I need control over my.
It's a control issue, and it's really, really unbiblical, because the first thing we're supposed to do is receive the love of Christ.
Yeah. Literally, the first thing.
That's what we. It's
that's
it's
like
to
first step.
Yeah, it's to receive, and it's also. So, like, fundamentally illogical, because, like, I don't know how you're extending love to others well if you can't receive it.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate you prioritizing, really, did you say communal care, community care?
Yeah.
Yeah,
both.
That.
And.
I mean, that's a challenge. That's a really, like, actually very practical as well.
I think it's a call to action.
Yeah.
For Christians. I think, you know, true self-care is countercultural. This, like, non-consumer version of self-care is countercultural, but even taking it a step farther, this true community care is, like, ultra countercultural.
Right.
And I think Christians should be leading up this movement of caring for each other in a way that benefits literally everybody. And also ourselves. And I think that's, like, where you see the cosmic Christ come through and all. You know, where, like, this is, like, the beauty and this is, like, the most sacred thing we can do is come together and create this communal care for one another.
Absolutely. And as opposed to being threatened by this when we see it in other communities, whether they're other religious communities or communities that are secular, whatever, like, we're in reference to cosmic Christ. I mean, we're called to come alongside those communities and celebrate that wherever we see it, as opposed to being put off by it.
Yeah.
Or strangely.
Sadly,
threatened,
like,
by it.
We're not always the best at this thing.
Right.
So I think
there's humility necessary there.
We could be encouraged by communities who are maybe doing this really well, and also maybe try to start doing it a little better too.
Absolutely. Darby, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
I really enjoyed the conversation. Is there anything else that you might want to? I was actually, I'd had, as I was writing things down, as we were discussing, I was like, okay, like, concrete takeaways, but you did identify the call to action in this most practical way. Like, this does not take extra money, and in fact, it doesn't even always take very much extra time.
Right.
Which I'm not trying to say, so let's set the bar really, really low.
Right.
But in fact, like, this is doable.
Yeah, and I think it can be things that people are already doing.
Right.
Spending time with friends, spending time in community, like gardening, you know, things that we do in our normal daily lives, those are acts of self-care and can be taken farther when we bring the community into them as a whole. So
mm-hmm. I will say, and you may have a final observation, and I wonder if you have insight on this. I think of, like, you know, John Rayleigh is really interesting about, he rarely, at least in my experience, he'll just do things for people,
mm-hmm.
and there's rarely room to, like, decline the offer,
yeah.
you know? Even though there are reasons to, like, I don't know, like, if we were to offer, like, babysit Dietrich, and you're like, we'd rather be with him, right? You know, like,
sure.
Obviously there are places where, like, declining the offer makes sense, but there's something about just, like, going and offering these things to people in a way that is, like, not, like, always putting them in the position of, like, being more polite by declining. Does
yeah.
that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know. How does the community catalyze? This is another probably pretty hard question, but, like, how do you help lead that in a way? Like, is it just simply by going out and beginning to do these kinds of things for people, or, like, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think, to a certain extent, it does go back to personality or interests or the capacity. I think John's a really good example of someone who, like, really loves acts of service, and he loves giving those type of acts of service. And for someone else, it may look a little bit different how they are catalyzing their time spent in self-care in order to bring it into this sense of community care, communal responsibility. So I think it can look different, but I do think it's just doing what you can in the season you're in, whatever that may look like for you. But I would want people to be very cognizant and aware of just doing those sort of things without also making sure you're being taken care of, whether that be from the community or also even going back to some of those previous self-care practices. There isn't necessarily a sustainability in just doing without also receiving some of that care and love yourself.
And I think the final thing maybe I have is that, just to remind our community, because I just know the sort of people that are within it, and I think that just happens, like, churches attract people that have similar maybe values or, like, perspectives on things. I just want to remind people of something that I think I'm always trying to remember myself, and we discuss, like, in our household, you know, you are more than what you produce. And there is a humility to not making your life about about producing,
yeah.
nonstop. And it's hard to accept that. And I think beginning to, like, be open to that and okay with it, as you said,
yeah.
is profoundly countercultural, but it's part of receiving the love of Christ.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's critical. And I appreciate your observations about, you know, the role of the cosmic Christ being represented through the whole body. I think that's something that people should spend some time wrestling with and thinking through as well.
Yeah.
Darby, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. I enjoyed talking.
Great conversation. Interesting, as you always are. Thank you, Center Community, and we'll see you next time.